Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, still on terrestrial radio. No plans to go into the hemisphere or the any other sphere, frankly. I like the sphere I'm on. I like terra firma. So this is July 4th weekend. This is the weekend that we've all been waiting for. It's a, you know, it's a cycle. We all love the weekend, the flags, the hot dogs, whatever. And I'm no different than anyone else. You know, little barbecue, not planned. And I picked up the local newspaper. I live in a communist county outside of San Francisco. It is known for its backwards nature. It's filled with progressives who are actually backwards. They're backwoods folks. The more progressive they claim to be, the more backwoodsy they actually are, the more provincial. The Harvard University came out with a study, so-called, recently, and said that July 4th parades tend to make people Republicans, and that you shouldn't attend if you're a Democrat. I'm not making this up. I swear to God, this is not made up. Now, of course, I don't know who's paid attention to anything Harvard's published since World War II in the social sciences, but this was actually published by some dope at Harvard, that July 4th parades are good for Democrats to stay away from because it tends to make children patriotic and vote Republican. Swear to God, not making it up. So I went to my local newspaper here in this communist county that hates America, Marin County, and it's a list of things to do and see for this July 4th weekend. And at the Mill Valley Public Library, there's the eternal hush of silence. At the Emily Gates Student Center, Songs for a New World, musical tracing the history of the American experience through the stories of a diverse set of characters. Now, you know, diversity is a code word for perversity, so I don't have to tell you what diverse means. If you're into dancing, there are ethnic dances for all levels this July 4th. There's another place that's offering beginning belly dance for the July 4th weekend. Here are kid-friendly events, Puff the Magic Dragon with puppets. And then we have Curious George, Let's Get Curious. Then there are art events. That's right, art events. Artists will be on hand to discuss their creations and concepts at the Mill Valley Art Walk this weekend. If you're into origami for the July 4th weekend, the Tam Valley Origami Society is holding a meeting. Again, if you want something patriotic, don't look for Marin County or San Francisco. They have no idea what America is. All they know is they hate it. Dominican University, celebrating women, the photographs of somebody or other. Marin Community Foundation, Black Power, Flower Power. Marin Headlands Visitor Center, the Art of the Butterfly. That's about the closest thing to anything sounding patriotic that I've seen. Now, wait, this is the last one. Tamales Regional History Center. I'm not making this up. To show you how far communism goes and to show you how insane communism is and how liberalism is a mental disorder, I'm not making up the following event. Tamales Regional History Center. Progressive local dairying of the early 20th century. Progressive local dairying. So they're trying to turn cows into communists? I mean, cows have always been communistic, I suppose. Over in Corte Madera, there's a parade called Freedom Rocks, where with no floats permitted, with flags on them, or anything to do with military trucks. Finally, the Marin County Fair for this weekend is featuring Shangri-La Chinese acrobats for the July 4th weekend. This is why I love the area so much. It's made me rich and famous. Because if there was a scintilla of sanity or patriotism, I wouldn't have a job. Welcome to the Savage Nation. As you know, well, you may not know, but Sunday night over here in the Bay Area, I'm having a very small cocktail party as a a reward for those folks who've given a certain donation to the Michael Savage Legal Fund. I wish I could invite everybody in America. I can't, number one, because you're too far away. Number two, it's only a cocktail party, but it's a very private one, and it's going to be in an undisclosed location somewhere in the San Francisco area. And I'm looking forward to meeting all of the donors who I've sent out the emails to. So if you've received one, because you've given over $100, frankly, and you're coming Sunday night, I'll be there to shake your hand personally. This will be the first live event I've done in 5 years. And there won't be more than 50 people there because I don't want to see more than 50 people. So having said that, let's move on to Michael Savage lifestyle. There's absolutely nothing in the news worth commenting on. Absolutely nothing. President Obama welcomed the WNBA team Seattle Storm to the White House last night. Again, Senator Dick Durbin says the Dream Act students are the future of America, and it's possible that an illegal alien could be president one day. That's Turbin Durbin. Then we have Reverend Al Sharpton. He's back in the news. He says pension reform is a civil rights issue. Then Michelle Bachmann on Palin says they want to see a mud wrestling fight between two women. Not me, honey. That's one mud wrestling match I would definitely not tune into, to be honest with you. And let's leave it at that. I noticed today that President Obama presented the outgoing Secretary of Anti-Defense, Robert Gates, with the Medal of Freedom Award. It was very touching when you consider that Robert Gates has overseen the destruction of the U.S. military and the dismantling, rather, of the U.S. military and the dismantling of NASA. It's no wonder that our first communist president would give him the, what award is it? The Medal of Anti-Freedom Award. Let's listen to clip one.
As president, the highest honor that I can bestow on a civilian is the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Oh, hey.
It speaks to the values we cherish as a people and the ideals we strive for as a nation.
Oh, hey.
And today it is my great privilege to present the Presidential Medal of Freedom to America's 22nd Secretary of Defense, Robert M. Gates.
Right. Good job, Mr. Gates, for dismantling the U.S. military, taking down the most advanced weapon systems, and seeing that NASA can no longer deliver a man to anyone at any site in space. Very good job. You've done a very good job for your communist boss. Now let's listen to Robert Gates choking up in clip two as he accepts this award.
I'm deeply honored and moved.
Again, a cry. All right, turn it off. I can't listen to a man cry. I lose respect for men who cry. Sorry. I don't understand this, but if I were Al-Qaeda or the Taliban and I heard the Secretary of Defense crying in a pink tie, Holder OK's criminal probe of CIA. Did you see this? He's got nothing better to do. Our esteemed attorney general says he's moving forward with criminal investigations into two detainee deaths during Bush-era CIA interrogations. What a shame. What a shame for on the American landscape this Eric Holder is. It's unbelievable to me. Amazon is going to push back on California. They want to have a sales tax collection. Amazon and California push for sales tax is unconstitutional. I have mixed feelings on that. I mean, why shouldn't they pay sales tax? Can anyone explain that to me? Why shouldn't? Well, you see, it gets very complicated. Let's say you're Amazon.com and customer buys your product in North Carolina and they pay no sales tax. So, but then a customer in California buys and they do pay sales tax. That doesn't cut it. It's not fair. I don't quite understand how this is going to work. Unless all 50 states suddenly start collecting taxes off the internet, I don't see that this is going to hold up, to be honest with you. Again, if you have a Savage lifestyle question, whether it's marriage, family, children, nutrition, health, anything that's on your mind that old Doc Savage can help you with, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. No, I will not be right back. I'm not leaving yet. I have to tell you what that is. In case you have never heard this segment before, every once in a while when I'm in the mood, I act as your life coach. And I've gotten the most amazing callers from young to old with questions that they think I have some capacity for answering. And usually they're very good questions, and it makes for very good radio. Because if I were driving around in a car, frankly, I wouldn't want to listen to any of the news, frankly. Like Lindsay Lohan hits clubs. John Lennon was a Reagan Republican. Why did MSNBC suspend another moron on for saying something about Obama? No, I'm not interested in the news today. But if you'd like a lifestyle question answered, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Boom, boom, boom.
Call me a Speedo, but my real name is Mr. Earl. It is the Savage Nation. It's Rock and Roll Thursday. We're doing lifestyle questions. Since I am the only person in talk radio qualified to answer questions on any topic, well, let's say the only person foolish enough to try, I will continue to do so. Geithner oversaw largest debt increase of any Treasury Secretary in history, says Matt Drudge. How is he retiring instead of being sent away in an orange jumpsuit? How did they get away with this? Whatever. Whatever. You got a lifestyle question? I'm Dr. Savage, life coach, and if you're lucky enough to get on this show in this segment, you're going to get $1,000 worth of advice for free. Okay? $1,000. That's what I would charge. You know, I'm thinking of actually doing life coach in person or on telephones because I'm a little bored during the day before the show looking at the news. I'm going crazy from it. And I really want to have a one-on-one with people, but I would charge $500 an hour. That's what I would charge. Sacramento, James, welcome to the program.
Yes, I have a question about what's happening with your Cadillac.
Would you like to buy it? It's sitting in my garage, honestly. I drove it 2 weeks ago, the 65 Caddy, the red one that I used. It's been on stage at the Concord Pavilion back in 5 years ago. And it's got 56,000 miles on it. It runs well. You know, it's not a cream puff, but I'm thinking of selling it. I don't have the room for it, and I want to put the money into the Savage Legal Defense Fund because my legal bills are very high. So I was thinking of auctioning it off. I'm not going to do so right now unless you're interested.
No, but I'm starting a foundation for young people to understand American exceptionalism through the automobile, and I would love to study that car related to our exceptionalism. You know, you're from the Cadillac era.
I am a Cadillac. That's the problem. My window glass is thicker than yours.
Right. I have a 50 coupe.
You know that the glass, it's interesting, the chrome is so thick on these cars. Chrome, you don't even see chrome anymore on cars. You tap a new car's back or front, it costs you $1,000. There's no bumper.
It's plastic.
Plastic, but it scratches. Why can't they put a scratch-resistant material on the back of a car instead of a bumper that needs to be repainted right away? And, you know, my motto, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight, you know I've used that before, right?
Absolutely.
So when you look at a 65 Cadillac, you think of mother, you think of apple pie, you think of America. The glass is thick, the chrome is thick, that kind of thing. Now look what we have today, 1-800-449-8255. Texas, Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I've got a relationship question. I've got a girl that I've been seeing for a couple of months now. I like her a lot. We have a great time together. I asked her to be my girlfriend, and apparently she's got feelings for somebody else still, and she didn't want to lie to me. Before she moves further with me, she kind of wants to see where those feelings for that other guy end up first, and I'm of the thought process that good things come to those who wait. Should I wait for her since I like her so much, or should I just dump her and say, the heck with this, and move on?
Well, I don't know the woman, but she's playing a little bit of a game here. Obviously, I don't want to disparage the woman because I don't know her, but she is playing you. Why was she dating you if she still has feelings for another man is the first question that comes to my mind.
Okay.
Do you have an answer to that?
No, I don't.
Well, wait a minute. She was dating you and she was still dating him, or she was dating you and then discovered she still had feelings for the first guy, the other guy?
Well, this is somebody she used to work with, and now he works in another state. You know, she hadn't seen him probably in a couple of months, and so he's literally been out of the picture, but she says she still has feelings.
All right. How old a woman is she?
She'll be 29 on Sunday.
And how old are you?
34.
All right, you're in the right age bracket. Look, nobody would advise you to walk away from somebody you have feelings for. That's number one. But when you say good things come to those who wait, I don't think the world works that way with regard to women in particular. You actually have to capture her emotionally, and I don't think you can do so by simply saying, I'll be here for you as long as it takes. I think she's going to devalue your worth if you put yourself in that position, don't you?
Sure, I agree.
All right, so I would put it to her in a non-confrontational way. My advice would be to sit down and have do you still see each other or not?
Yes.
Well, then sit down and say, you know, you've put me in a quandary. I know you care for me, but you're telling me to wait as long as it takes. And turn it around and say, Barbara, how would you feel if I said that to you? That after these months, I tell you there's another woman I've been holding in the back of my mind and I have feelings for her. You know, how would you feel if you did that to me? If I did that to you, rather. I mean, maybe that would dawn on her what she's doing. She could be a little immature, right?
Sure, I agree.
All right, so the bottom line from my point of view is to just be non-confrontational. You don't want to drive her away. Talk quietly with her and ask her how she would feel if you presented her with the same problem. Take 2 aspirin and get back to me on Monday. 1-800-449-2255. Florida, Doug, fire away. Lifestyle question on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I was a pediatrician for 20 years, and I saw the writing on the wall. That's all another discussion, but I need your advice. I closed my office doors a month ago, and I've gone into another field of medicine. I want to know what you thought of it.
What field?
Age management and bioidentical hormone replacement therapy.
It sounds wonderful, but it's probably a very tough climb right now, correct?
This actually sounds like a part of medicine that is going to continue to maintain itself in the private sector, thereby not having to deal with insurance companies, but it seems to be cutting edge. It's testosterone replacement for men.
But doctor, why did you leave pediatrics? I don't understand it. If you're a pediatrician, why would you have left that field?
I went broke doing it. I ran a quality practice. I didn't give 9 vaccines to 2.
Oh, yes. I heard that pediatricians were the least financially rewarded of all because they would not write prescriptions and give vaccinations. And those who did to survive were not really good pediatricians. They became, you know, more or less running a factory to make money. I understand what you're saying. You were in the old school of a pediatrician.
I couldn't do it. I was classically trained in the places I went to school, undergraduate and my medical school, and I was taught to use my brain. And not
unbelievable. No, it's very sad to think that a good doctor has to leave a field because he won't become a gunner.
Savage.
I mean, you used to, you know, okay, you used to my acerbic wit with regard to political figures, and I accept that. But there's more in life than the clowns in the public sphere, which is life itself. And so when I do life coach or life coaching on the show, it's really very serious for me, and I try to be as rational as I possibly can without being a wise guy because, you know, you're calling because you really want answers. And you're figuring, okay, look, Savage is a pretty bright guy. I've listened to him for a number of years. I trust his opinion. What does he think? And I'm acting as though I'm a member of your family. Think of me as an uncle or somebody like that, a brother who you speak with on the phone and you want his opinion. It doesn't mean you're going to follow my advice. So I'm being lifestyle coach Dr. Savage right now. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. It was one call I wanted to get with the guy with the – where's the one? Did he go? Oh, here it is, Chicago, Eddie. Eddie, you got a great question. What is it?
Yes, Dr. Savage. I would like to know if there is a certain diet that I can eat that would help my odds as to having a boy child instead of a girl child. I have 2 girls right now, and I was curious.
Very interesting. Well, I cannot find any evidence in the literature that you can eat certain foods or take certain vitamins to change the balance with regard to the sex of a child. However, there is medical literature on nutritional factors in fertility, to improve fertility, how to improve semen counts via certain vitamins. Would you like me to talk about how to improve semen counts with certain vitamins?
I guess you could say we're practicing right now because my.
Well, isn't that what the honeymoon's all about? Is practice.
We have a 7-month-old right now, and we're trying to space our children out in between 3 and 4 years, like our oldest daughter, is 4 years old, and then I have a seven months old.
So, all right, so your issue is not fertility per se. Your issue is you want to make sure, or you want to tilt the odds in favor of a male child, right?
Correct.
I do not have an answer for that question. However, folks listening to the show, Healing Children Naturally, there are three pages on food for fertility, diet to improve fertility outlined, and semen counts improve via vitamins. And I base it upon older literature. In other words, I went back to the 1920s when many of the older doctors were still using foods and diets, and I found things that I thought were worth talking about. You may say, well, oh, that's out of date, man. That's not a drug. That's not medicine. Well, that's exactly the point. It's not a drug and it's not medicine. It's called how it was done through the ages. And so back in 1928, a Dr. McCumber suggested the following to improve fertility. Be certain your protein intake is adequate. Be certain you're consuming adequate levels of calcium, phosphorus, iodine, iron, and other trace minerals. Your water intake must be adequate. Your total calorie should be at least the level of the RDA. Now, these are very basic concepts for fertility. But what if you're a man and you want to improve your semen count because you've been told that you have a low sperm count? Can you do it with diet? There is literature that suggests yes, you can, and that's on pages 6 and 7 of Healing Children Naturally, available only on my website. Sperm production is improved both qualitatively and quantitatively by supplementation with the B vitamins and vitamin E. It's been found that with the use of as little as 150 to 200 milligrams a day of vitamin E, not only was the sperm count increased in men who had problems with sperm production, but also there was an improvement in sperm motility and a reduction in the number of abnormal sperm. More can be read in the book, and I don't want to, you know, get too technical, but it's pretty clear what we're talking about. And I think it's very important that people understand there's a lot of information out there that isn't getting out to you. Now let's go on to questions other than nutrition on the Savage Nation. Some of them I can answer, some of them I really cannot answer. Truthfully, there are questions I can't even take. New York, WOR, Dave, what's your lifestyle question?
Yes, Michael, I'm a business school professor, and I'm going to be teaching an interesting class this fall called Career and Life Planning. And I was curious as to what kinds of, based on your experience, what kind of questions would you pose to the students to get them thinking about their lives and their careers and so on and so forth? I want to get.
Wow. So you're a business professor?
That's correct, yes.
And you want to know what questions you would ask. How old are the students?
They'll be MBA students.
Oh, MBA students. And you want to provoke what in them? I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
Well, I want to provoke in them some thought around what I consider life's biggest questions. Who am I? How am I going to measure my life? And so on. I was just curious as to
So you're not just sticking to the business side. You want to turn them into well-rounded individuals as well, correct?
You got it.
Well, that's quite a challenge. I mean, any young person who's going to get an MBA is usually coming into that program from somewhere else, and they're anxious to make money, they're anxious to make more money, and they're anxious to make money, period. I don't know how you're going to reach them on any other level. Do you really think they're going to be interested in the bigger issues?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's going to be a requirement to the course. So they're going to sign up with that understanding.
All right, so you want to bring the ethical side as well, don't you? Isn't that what you're implying? You want them to be ethical business people?
I want them to be ethical. I want them to be well-rounded.
I'll tell you what I would do if I were you and I really wanted to challenge them. I would create two or three scenarios of a business situation where a lot of money could be made, but I'd write it out. A lot of money could be made on the sale of a railroad, let's say. I'm picking something out of the blue, a railroad tracks going. However, if this railroad goes through this area, it wipes out 55 units of housing that the poor live in. And ask them how they would deal with that problem. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're putting them in a quandary right there. You're challenging their liberalism against their commercial interests, and it's interesting what their answers would be. But I think that would provoke answers, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I just want them to think beyond the moment, think long-term what their life is going to look like.
Well, there you go. So, in other words, it's people, not profits, or is it people and profits, and where is that line drawn?
Yep, that's exactly right. Plus a little.
So I would give them the conflicting question that you could probably easily come up with, because there are so many examples of a good a good chance to make money that has some social implications that might be quite negative on certain populations, and present them with that conflict and have them answer it. How would they act? Now, I would even raise the stakes on them and say, and it's your first position in a major corporation, and you've been given the job of dealing with the people who are affected. How would you deal with it? Or would you leave the company? Really put them on the spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that very
right?
much. Thank you so much.
See, thank you. I don't know if it helps at all. I mean, I left a scholarship in my first year in graduate school, and I didn't have a dime because the professor said you have to kill the lab rats, and I wouldn't do it. I told you the story. And it's a strange story because I said I'm not going to kill the mice or the rats, whatever they were using. I didn't want to hold them in my hand, stroke them, talk to them, and stick a blade in the back of their head. I didn't want to kill, you know, lab mice. So the SOB fired me. He knew I didn't have a dime. I had nothing. I was in a strange state. It was my $300 a month stipend. I had nothing, nowhere to go. I quit. Well, he fired me, whatever. I went and left and went into another field where I didn't have to kill animals called botany, and that led me to ethnobotany. That led me to all the islands of the South Seas, and that led me to a very interesting road in my life. In a strange way, you could say it led to radio. I don't know how you can say that, but there was a linkage somehow. It's all part of my fate. Let's put it to you that way. But in other words, hey, if you would say, well, I can't leave the job. I got to kill the mice or I'll lose the money. I walked out on many, many. I'd say there are other cases, and I can't tell them on the air because of legal reasons. I once worked for a corporation, and I couldn't take it anymore. The person that I was reporting to was a monster. Actually, the person I was reporting to was a very nice guy, the CEO. But then they offered me another position to stay in this out-of-state position, and they gave me a very good salary. They gave me shares in the company that were worth about $500,000. The problem was, the minute I signed on to stay on, the CEO's son, who was 22 years old, became my immediate boss, my supervisor. And he was an SOB. I was a grown man, and he wanted to show me how smart he was, even though he was quite shallow. And he started to present things to me that first day. You got to do this. You got to do that. You're going to report to me. You're going to do that. I walked into the CEO's office a day after I had accepted the position. And I said, unfortunately, I have to leave the company. He said, but Michael, you just negotiated $500,000 in stock option. Now, I got to tell you, this was 20 years ago. $500,000 was still a lot of money 20 years ago, especially since I had almost nothing at the time. I said, no amount of money is worth working for this child. I'm leaving. And I left. And I came back to California without really anything to fall back upon. And shortly thereafter, I sent out 500 tapes to 500 radio stations with a mocked up tape about a talk show called The Savage Nation. And that led to the career I have today. What I'm saying to you is that if you really have faith in yourself, something good is going to pop up. You don't have to sit there and take it from people who are monsters, who you hate, who are out to hurt you. Believe me, there's always something better. Okay, so now we'll move on, okay? Wisconsin, Max, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I just got a little, situation here. My parents, after 23 years of marriage, are getting a divorce. My dad is kind of initiating it. It's for financial reasons, and my mom and my two younger brothers are very shook up about it. I'm a 20-year-old kid. I go to college in Minnesota. I got a little, just a little situation just because I don't know whether I should stay home and, stay supportive of my family there. I'm home for the summer right now, but...
If you stay home, who would you be home with if your folks are getting divorced?
Well, I'd be with my mom. I'd be with my two younger brothers who are both, just getting into high school right now.
All right, so your father's left your mother, in essence?
Right, yeah.
Did he leave her for another woman?
We don't know, really. We know that he says it's for financial reasons. My mom got in a little bit of credit card debt a while ago.
Your mother's going to be in a lot of an emotional trauma. So as you're the eldest son?
Yes, yes.
And what would you do in the alternative, if you didn't stay home this summer, what would you be doing?
I'd be going back to school, to finish up my junior year of college in Minnesota there. So,
wait a minute. You cannot leave college. The family is very important, but if you derail your college education as the new head of the family, in essence, you're actually doing your family a disservice. So for their sake, you have to finish your degree.
Right, and that's what they keep telling me. You know, it just feels, I feel really guilty just because, you know, my mom is going through a ton of just, like, emotional pain.
How far away will you be from your mother?
Like 4.5 hours.
Okay, so you're in the same state?
No, I'm in a different state.
All right, but you can't stay home and hold your mother's hand. It's going to wreck both of you.
Okay, yeah, I just, you know, but I have two younger brothers, too, you know, who are just kind of going through the same thing. And
so you're afraid that your younger brothers are liable to go a little wild without a strong figure around to control them?
I don't know if...
Wait a minute. Where's your father going? Where's he going to live?
He's just living, you know, he's still living in town here, but, you know, he's just not...
Boy, is he going to take care of the children? Is he going to take care of your brothers?
Well, we don't know yet. He doesn't really communicate with us that much.
Oh, so he's flaked out on the whole family. So that's a very problematic situation. Well, yes, of course there's a conflict that you wouldn't be calling. And of course you're bewildered. And of course you're perplexed. And of course you feel guilty. You think you're putting yourself above your needs above your family's needs. But if you actually analyze it, your going back to school is important for your family, because what you make of yourself is going to have an influence upon your mother and your brothers in the short and the long term. You've got to be a role model for them and show that life must go on.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess.
Okay, that's my advice. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Give it up for the 2010 WNBA champions, the Seattle Storm.
There you go. The country's melting down, and he's got another basketball team in the White House. See, isn't it wonderful having such a mature man in the White House? A man who has his priorities so organized that he would invite a basketball team at a time like this. We have wars, 5 wars now. The economy is melting down, and he's inviting basketball teams into the White House. All right. So you know my position on Barack Hussein Obama. What else is new under the sun? Okay, Houston, Texas. David, what's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, happy Thursday to you. Listen, I had called your show maybe about 2 months ago. You were doing the same kind of show format. And I had called in and basically to get some advice. I was thinking about proposing to my girlfriend. I was kind of telling you, like, the main issue that I was having was, well, I think she can be a little sloppy. She thinks I can be a little too clean. And you had posed one question to me that really just made me think and put everything into perspective. You just said, well, listen, Dave, would she be a good mother? And without, you know, any hesitation, the answer was yes. And so I took your advice, and I called her old man the next week and got his permission. And then we got engaged, and we are getting married in about a month and a half. And my question to you, even though I know the answer, is probably no, but my question to you is, would you like to come to our wedding?
Oh, well, you make a very, very nice offer. Unfortunately, I don't do much traveling these days, but I'll be there in spirit. If you'll tell me when and where it is, we'll make sure we'll tell the audience about it. One cautionary note. You made a point about your wife being sloppy and you being a neat freak, correct?
Correct.
And I told you to overlook the little stuff and look at the big picture, which is, will she be a good mother, which you did. However, that does not mean that your fanatic attention to neatness is not going to impact the marriage. It will. It's going to continue to be a problem between the two of you if you let it. So you have to go into it knowing that this little situation is going to be there forever, probably. In other words, don't nitpick her for the sloppiness. You better just be the guy who picks things up.
Hey, I've just come to accept it. I love her just the way she is.
That's it. That's it. Look at the big picture. But, again, don't expect her to change now is what I'm saying. That just because you're going to get married, she's suddenly going to become a neat freak. She won't.
Right. Well, I'm not expecting her to. So.
All right. Well, good, good. Another marriage in the Savage Nation. That's beautiful. Savage gave him marital advice, and it works. Score one for the Savage Nation, you know. Very, very nice. 1-800-449-8255. Boy, this hour flew by. It really does. I have a, okay, here's a caller. I don't know if I can answer it, but go ahead. Monica on line 7 from Houston. What's on your what's your question?
I needed some help setting the mood with my husband. I have tried everything, and marriage counseling is not in the cards for us right now. It's pretty expensive, so.
Okay, what age bracket are you in?
I'm sorry? I'm 29, what? And he is 26.
You're 29, and you need me to answer to you on how to set the mood?
Imagine, we've only been married for 2 years, and already we just had a son, so maybe it has something to do with.
Oh, wait. How old is the latest baby?
He's a year old.
Okay, so look, men lose interest in wives generally around the time of pregnancy and birth. Let's not mince words about it. Women think that they're more beautiful than ever, and they feel it, but the fact is a lot of men get very conflicted. They don't know whether they're looking at a Madonna or, you know, suddenly the Madonna becomes someone that they don't want to touch. And they feel very conflicted about having sex with somebody who is a mother figure. You understand that, correct?
Yes, yes.
Now, hasn't the marriage counselor told you that?
We haven't gone. I mean, it's pretty expensive. And
all right, so let's forget the marriage counselor. He's not going to tell you anything I didn't just tell you. You've got to sit down with your husband and say, look, whatever, what's his name? Bob? Let's make him Bob, so he's, in case he's listening. Bob, I understand that you don't feel the same way towards me physically as you did in the beginning, but I want you to understand that as the child gets a little older, I'm going to be there for you again. And, but you got to talk to him about it. Don't walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done that yet? Have you confronted the exact issue?
I have. I gained weight after the pregnancy. I had a C-section. So.
All right. Well, okay. So there's another confounding factor, you know. So for me to talk in a vacuum like this without seeing you and seeing the physical problems is also a difficulty. I think you know the answers to your own question. I think you just wanted a vent, correct?
That, and I didn't know if there was anything specifically I should try. I've tried.
Well, I can't give you that kind of, you know, love advice. I mean, I'm not into that. Call Anthony Weiner. He may have some tips.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is none other than the Savage Nation. We're going into the July 4th weekend. We have a wonderful president in the White House, somebody who we all know in our hearts loves America. We have a first lady who is frugal, who doesn't spend an extra dime of the taxpayers' money. We have a wonderful, wonderful outgoing Secretary of Defense who's done everything he could to make sure America remains strong. We have an attorney general who thinks only of what is patriotic and right for the American people. We have a treasury secretary who wants to leave after he's done such a good job for America, after all, he worked for Henry Kissinger for 3 years, and then they put the young boy in charge of the Federal Reserve, and then Kissinger stooge became the head of the treasury, and now he's going to move on to something else. What could be better? Life is wonderful. And so instead of talking about politics on the Savage Nation, we are going to talk about life coach questions. And I've got amazing questions. I'm astounded. By the way, I think this is great radio. I'm taking a chance here. Nobody else in talk radio does it. A, because they can't, and B, because they wouldn't take the chance. But being that I'm the kind of guy I am, I'm doing this kind of show, and I hope you enjoy it. If you'd rather I just talk about right wing, left wing, this wing, that wing, I'm not going to do it right now because you've heard it before. You'll hear it again when there's an important news story, believe me, I'll do it. Or if you really want to just do news, go to michaelsavage.com. And you can call me on, I'll tell you what, you can call me on any question or any comment you want on the news that's up on my website. Let's put it to you that way. But in the interim, I'm actually interested in the callers I'm getting. Las Vegas, Kurt, what's your lifestyle question?
Thanks, Dr. Savage. I guess I'm just looking for some advice or to see what you do in my particular situation. Now, I'm 26 years old, and I've been married for pretty much 6 years now with my wife, and I've known her since we were 14, actually. Met in high school. Weren't high school sweethearts, just good friends. And as time gone by, you know, I joined the military, and I'm going to make it a career. I know that in my heart that I love it, and I'm trying to follow in my family's footsteps with it. And
beautiful.
Having said too, I'm putting myself through college because I want to better myself inside that career and also have something I can do once
fantastic.
I get out after I serve.
Fantastic.
And maturing as I'm getting older and like hitting it as hard as I can, my wife, she's just a stay-at-home wife, and she just, I mean, all I ask is please keep the house clean, you know, cook, do whatever you need. You just, you know, just support me at home because I'm going to do all the work. And just put yourself through school. I'll pay for it if we have to. I'll go any
route. But she doesn't want to go to school. She doesn't even want to do that.
No, like, honestly, we had the same exact classes this past semester, and it's a long story. But because of what she pulled, she decided to drop out. Although I was ahead of her in the classes, and I was basically giving her the work. Like, this is all you have to do.
Why did she drop out of school?
She just said she couldn't handle it because we have a son at home, and he's a special needs child. But she said handle anything with having.
All right, so she's a little overwhelmed from the special needs situation.
Yeah.
As someone who had a brother, which I did, I don't know if you know, I had a brother who was born what they called brain damaged in those days. It seriously affects the other children. It affects the mother most profoundly, but it also affects the father profoundly. So you got to cut her some slack here. You know, she's filled with conflicts because both mother and father feel that they're somewhat at fault. And the guilt with regard to a special needs child is something that is never, ever discussed so far as I know. Yes, of course, you should focus on the child's needs, but the parents also have to be dealt with what they're feeling. I mean, you yourself probably have some problems with that, right?
Oh, I definitely do. And the thing is, this isn't our first child. Our first son, he actually passed away because of just a genetic malformation. And we found out through negligence of the doctors when they did genetic testing.
Oh, God, what a mess.
We were both
What a sad, sad story. And you still have the heart to want to go into the military despite all of these terrible things that have happened to you?
Oh, yeah, I'm in the military. I've been in for about 4 years now, and I absolutely love it. I love doing my job every day.
Well, thank God you have a structure that is bigger than you, in which you can lose yourself. That is really the most important thing I have heard. But your wife is the problem now, correct?
Yes.
So what is it you'd like me to answer? I don't quite understand which part of this question I can help with at all.
Just with everything like weighing down on me, and just I just feel like I have to drag her along. It's not. I don't mean to be harsh about it. I know.
Oh no, be harsh because she's not listening to this show. Obviously, is that correct?
No, not at all.
Is she apolitical?
Is she political? No.
No, I'm saying so she is apolitical. She could care less about politics.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Does she know that you're very political?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Does she care about your politics? Does she find you to be too right-wing, too conservative or anything?
I find it bores her, you know, for the majority of it. And so I kind of...
Yeah, so you don't have that in common. You don't share a common political orientation, which is difficult. So what do you share other than the burden of the tragedies in your between the two of you? Do you share anything else?
We used to have more common interests when we were younger and when we were friends, and and we still seem to share some when we actually first got together, but as time goes by, it's just more and more of it has just dropped off, and it's, you know...
How are you doing financially?
Financially, I take care of everything, and I run the house as far as finances.
No, I'm saying, do you have enough money as a member of the military to support your family right now?
Yes, I do. More than enough, actually. I've made some good.
You see, this is an interesting thing because, you know, military personnel are underpaid to begin with, but here you are saying I have more than enough. So you're not a greedy man. You're a very interesting person. You're a very good person. You want to give to the country, and you are giving to the country. You're a good father. You're a good husband. And you feel that your wife is somehow not a drag on you, but you don't know how to motivate her, is what you're asking, what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't know what to do. I'm like kicking and screaming in the dark, and I've told her that. Like,
and I assume you're calling this radio program because you have no one else to turn to. Is that correct?
I mean, I've talked to family about it, but like somebody who's not family, not a close friend, just somebody on the outside, just, you know, unbiased opinion, who don't really know either of us and just can hear the situation.
Well, there's no way to kickstart people. You can't come up with some magic idea like bring home a, you know, Barbie doll for her and she's going to react to it. I'm using a metaphor, of course. The problem here is systemic between not between the two of you necessarily, but this woman has already, she's lost a child, right? You said you lost a child?
Yes, we have, and we're going to lose her.
Okay. Now you have a second child who is developmentally disabled or what?
It's a whole slew. You probably know the terms. Miller-Dieker, lissencephaly.
Oh, God. You're a poor God. It's terrible. Terrible suffering. You've got to understand your wife is suffering. She's in very deep pain, and I'm sure you do know that, correct?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
So you're afraid that if you don't do something and you don't intervene, she's going to drift further and further away from you and further away from an active life, and she's going to become a complete vegetable lost to the world, is what you fear.
Exactly.
Where is her mother in all of this?
You know, I want her to progress in her life. And
No. Where is your wife's mother in all of this?
Where is she? Actually, another addition to the story is I'm actually slotted to go overseas in 4 days and for a year away from her, so she's with her mom in Florida.
Oh, my God. Is her mom at all helpful?
Oh, yeah, she's very helpful. She's a very, very wonderful woman, definitely.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do for your family, only because you've touched me so deeply. It's not a big deal, but it's a token of my gratitude, and I'm sure for the people who are listening to this program across America, if you'll be so kind as to give us an address that is not on the air, but to my, my producer on the Savage Nation, I'm going to send you a gift of $500 for the July 4th weekend. It may not come until next week, but I just want to give you something personal for that, okay?
Wow, thank you. Oh, wow. I don't know what to say. Thank you so much.
Other than I'm sorry to hear you're going through such terribly difficult times, so I hope we don't get calls now of people who want money because I'm not going to give out any more money. I mean, it's just awful because as someone who's seen what a child who is handicapped does to everyone in the family without knowing, they don't do it. But what having a handicapped child or a developmentally disabled child, the effects upon the mother, the father, the other siblings is overwhelming. And people don't even understand it. And a father like this, who still has the strength to care enough to stay in the military and fight for his country, God bless him. I'll be back.
Savage.
Why do fools fall in love? Why do birds sing so gay? This kid could hit notes that it was so beautiful. Died at 18 of a drug overdose. Anyway. Wherever there's talent, there's tragedy. Welcome to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Harvard says that the July 4th parades are right-wing. I swear to God, when I saw that story this morning, I said, I got to put it on my website, michaelsavage.com. Harvard University did a study. You hear, a study at Harvard is the equivalent of a study in my dog's doghouse. A new study from Harvard finds that July 4th parades energize only Republicans and makes children right-wingers. Can you believe that a university that was once so great as Harvard, and I'm going back to the years that it was a great university, and make no mistake about it, it was once a great university, it has become so infested with the idiocy and the mental disease called liberalism that they would actually publish a false study that says July 4th parades are right wing and that only energize Republicans. Astounding. Kucinich praises Syrian dictator on Syrian TV. Liberalism is a mental disorder. U.S. puts Israel on terror list. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Obama and Holder demonized the CIA. They're going to go after CIA officers who did some bad things to the terrorists under Bush. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Obama dismisses the fuss about Libya conflict. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Senator Turbin Durbin says illegal alien could be our future president. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Some terrorists and Gitmo who are ready to be released ask to stay in Gitmo rather than go home. And liberals say Gitmo is a bad place. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Poll numbers continue alarming trend for Obama. Can't say that about that. North Korea now heads the UN disarmament panel. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Tax the rich, he yelped, while Michelle enjoyed Africa. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Let's see what else is on the Savage Nation. John Lennon was a closet Reagan fan. Can't say that about that. Bogus breast cancer charity raised $9 million. Liberalism is a mental disorder. To catch a predator host, nailed. Liberalism is a mental disorder. All this and more on the Savage Nation. Let's go back to the callers. Chicago Mike on WIND, what's on your mind?
Well, Doc, I need your sociological expertise right here. I'm a baby boomer. I grew up in the 60s, sex, drugs, rock and roll, experienced a lot of things, went to a lot of rock concerts, and now I'm a middle-aged guy with children, and the question is, they're being exposed to drugs and sex and rock and roll, some of the things I did, and I'm kind of curious, how honest, open, forthcoming are you going to be? Would one be? Is it advantageous to be?
No. It's not their business. They don't want to know that you're a wild young kid. It doesn't engender love and trust. In fact, it turns you into a friend, just like some of the other friends who are going to mislead them. I would leave that alone. How old are the children?
In their 20s.
Well, they're not kids anymore, so why is this even coming up?
Well, there's a little guilt going on here. I mean, you know, like... I denied certain things. I acknowledged certain things, you know, some of the more tame.
Right, of course. So stick to them, the more things you can feel comfortable to. You don't have to tell them about every little thing you did. They don't want to know it, number one. They don't want to see their father in that mental picture because it'll distort them for the rest of their lives. You understand you're not doing them a favor?
Understood.
In other words, okay, honesty is a wonderful thing, but there's a time and a place where you bring up certain things, and there's a time and a place where you keep it to yourself.
What if they bring it up, though, and ask direct questions?
Oh, well, that's another story. So have they brought it up?
Well, certainly not to the specific level, but to the, you know, to the general area.
All right, what, give me an example. Is it the sexual part or the drug part?
Drug part.
Okay, so what are they saying? Dad, did you ever smoke dope?
No, that's the tame part.
I'm sorry, that's what?
The team, you know.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You were way beyond that. You were really deeply into some heavy things. And, you know, now you're going to go into an area, I don't know that you want to tell them that you did coke or you did, I mean, what'd you do, beyond coke on top of it all?
No. You know, psychedelic things, experiences, natural things, you know.
So you used LSD, but that was very common in the
60s. That's what I'm saying. It was a lifestyle.
So why don't you tell him you used it once in a while and it screwed your mind up and you wish to God you didn't?
Well, there you go.
Well, is that true or are you glad you used LSD?
I'm a responsible adult with a job and a family.
No, I understand that. But looking back on those years, would you recommend your children drop a tab of acid?
Absolutely not. That's a hypocrisy.
Well, why not? Why would you recommend they not do that?
Well, because it provided nothing but potential danger. I mean, nothing good came up.
Well, so tell them that. You could say you used acid. It was the worst thing you ever did in your life. It set you back. You wish to God you could take those years back, and you would never do it because it set you on in areas that you never wanted to go, and it didn't do you any good, and it's all a lie that it opens up your mind. It doesn't open up your mind. It opens up your fears.
Well, thank God I never got into it to any extent like that would imply. But, you know,
well, I mean, there are people walking around Berkeley to this day who are out of their minds because they took too many acid trips. Some of them have become congressmen and senators from Berkeley.
I took my family to San Francisco, and I took them to Haight-Ashbury, and I took them all over those places.
This is the sickest city in the world, not only in America. The people here who run it are amongst the most demented people on the planet. They have no concept how comical they actually are to the rest of the world. And it's all related to drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Okay? I would just say, you know, hold a little bit of your counsel to yourself. The children don't need to know every little detail of your life.
Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. There's no news today. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's around July 4th. There's plenty of news. I just read you all the stories on my website, and you're not interested in any of this. Holder OK's criminal probe of CIA. Can you imagine we have such a loopy attorney general that he would spend the time now, right up to the election, crucifying CIA officers from the Bush era in an attempt to satisfy the lunatics on the far left? This is what we have for a government now. It's a totally irrational administration. It's irrational from the top to the bottom. So that's why I'm doing life coach questions. Why is the media obsessed with the Casey Anthony case? I don't understand this. I see it and turn it right off. Why are they focusing on one case for 6 months, a year, over and every channel? I don't understand this. I won't cover the story. All right, whatever. Don't call me about it, though, because then you'll make me cover it. Cincinnati, Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks very much. It's always a pleasure listening to your show. You got such a great amount of wisdom. Hey, I've got a three-year-old daughter that is real intelligent, and I'm just curious if you have some ideas and things I could do to help her, expand her knowledge and to learn and grow faster.
Very interesting. Now, you know she's brighter than her peers through... What, just simply through your own observations or through school? The school told you?
She's only 3 years old, so she's not going to daycare or school, but I've got quite a few girls that have come in to watch her. We've got sitters that watch her all day long when we're at work. And,
She's very intelligent. She's highly precocious. And you have to understand that when she goes to school, there are many programs for the dumb. There are many programs for the juvenile delinquent. There are many programs for every type of child except for the bright. You know that in our society. They cater to the dumbest, not to the brightest. I hope you understand that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but you're right.
It's unfortunate, right. When I went to school, they had special programs for bright kids to make sure America kept advancing. Now, because we have a backwards view of the universe, they spend all their money on the stupid rather than on the brightest. Troublemakers, they get special attention. You name it. So you as a parent are calling because you already know what to do. I mean, you're reading to her, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I would think that reading, make believe you're the tutor. So what are you not doing with her that you should be? Do you take her to art museums?
No, we haven't done that lately, but that is something I definitely want to be doing. I've been working.
All right. I would definitely open up her mind to great art. I would take it to the museums. And Cincinnati must have some classical art in one of the museums, I would assume. I'm not familiar with the museums there, but every city, especially a city of that size, would have a decent collection of fine art, correct?
Sure, definitely.
All right, so I would go there. I would think a three-year-old is not going to need a docent to explain what the painting is, but you can show her through the form and the shape and the color what a great painting is you don't want to compare. She wouldn't understand a comparison. Why don't you just expose it to some great masters to start with?
Yeah, that's a great idea. What are some
All right,
things?
So that would be one thing. Then music is very important. Do you have music playing in the house at any time?
Yeah, quite often each day.
What kind of music?
We listen to Christian music and children's music. She enjoys mainly the children's music right now. But
very beautiful. I would expose her to some great classical music, which has been shown to absolutely expand the consciousness of children. Sir, I don't have to tell you with the other side of it what it does to the brains. All you got to do is look at Lindsay Lohan to see where that ends up. That really works out real well to expose a child to that kind of garbage. But I would play... get CDs of some of the, you know, greats, get Bach, get, I don't think that Beethoven is something a three-year-old can really relate to, truthfully. It may be too heroic for a child to listen to, especially some of his great symphonies, but I would get Chopin and see what she reacts to and try to see if she has any musical talent.
Yeah, we actually just started giving her piano lessons about a month ago. So
now, what about mathematics? There must be some way to increase her mathematical skills. this is an area I don't know anything about in terms of advice, and I would suggest that you... I go to an expert. I go to the internet, frankly. You know, there's a way. The search engines today are so good that if you know what to look for, you can get the answer. Just put in the correct words. So in this case, I would do a search, whether it's the Google or any other search engine, and say, mathematical lessons for the three-year-old. Okay? See what comes up. Okay. See what comes up. It's amazing what might come flying up off the internet.
Yeah, can I ask you, what were some of the things that you did with your kids that you found really helpful?
Oh, well, see, that's another story. I did almost everything I just told you. I was a big museum goer. I took them to museums. I did not make a big deal out of school other than they had to go to school and they had to do their homework. I never got mad at them if they didn't get an A or something like that. I also took my children I took them out of school in the middle of the year on ocean trips when I was a lecturer at sea, on the understanding that they would do their schoolwork on the ship with me as the tutor. Of course, that didn't always work out. They usually were more interested in running around on the ship and looking at the ocean. But I had felt that the exposure to countries such as Fiji and the people in the islands would do more, for example, for my son than just simply sitting in a classroom, and it sure worked out for him. He's a person who knows how to get along with people all over the world. And I would have to say that the exposure to people of the world helped him with that. So it's not just going to be through school books. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, sure. Hey, I really appreciate your advice. And like I said, you're one of the wisest people I've ever heard talk. And it's just a blast listening to you.
That's beautiful. Let me send you a gift. I'm going to send you a free copy of Healing Children Naturally if you'll give us your... email, because I think diet is something so important, especially for young children, and it's often overlooked. This is the Savage Nation. If you have a life coach question for Coach Savage, you know the number, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Goodness, there's so many questions, and I don't know where to go that's going to interest you. Let's say you're sitting in a car, and you're somewhere in Brooklyn, New York, and you're driving past the chair that Anthony Weiner just sat in, and you're listening to WO. Anthony Weiner just got up from a chair in a cafe. Oh, goodness. So here's July 4th weekend. Am I going to poison myself with a hot dog? I don't know. Probably. I usually do it on about three times a year I poison myself with hot dogs. I was warned against hot dogs when I was a kid by my father, who was not really a food fanatic at all. But he would say to me, how could you eat that garbage? I said, what do you mean? He said, don't you know what's in a hot dog? He said, it's the worst leftovers from a slaughterhouse floor they put into a skin, and they call that a hot dog. So I said, okay, thanks for sharing, Dad. Then I said, how about a pickle? I said, that's a cucumber. No, he said, if you ever went into a pickle factory and you saw the rats running in and out of the barrels, you'll never eat a pickle again. I said, thanks for sharing, Dad. So to this day, I have somewhat of an aversion to hot dogs and pickles. I don't really indulge myself in that. Sacramento, KSTE country. Eric, what's on your mind, Eric? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I had a question. If you think I should continue to pursue getting back together with my ex, or should I just let it go? That's one question. The second one was, we have a child together, a five-year-old son. Should I continue to try and include her in activities that we do together as a family?
No, wait, I'm really missing something. Include the child from the former marriage? You have a new marriage? Is that what you're saying?
No. I had a girlfriend that we were living together, and we had a child together, and then she kicked me out. And so we had kind of a pseudo-marriage. You know, we were trying to play house.
Right, I get it. That happens. There's no shame in that. And then, so what's the problem right now?
Well, she didn't want to. She broke up with me about 6 or 7 months ago, and so I moved out. And so we've been, swapping them back and forth. And every now and then, when I see her, we're able to, hang out, the three of us. And
yeah.
It's, good times, just like it always was. And I say, hey, why don't we get back? I try and say, hey.
All right. So what are you asking? Because you're saying, should you get back with her? The question is, will she get back with you?
Yeah, that's the thing, is I've been kind of pursuing it now for a while, and I just don't know if I should continue to pursue it. Maybe it's,
How old is she? She's a young kid, isn't she? She's in her young 20s?
No, she's 49.
Well, how old are you?
36.
Well, who broke up with who?
She broke up with me.
Why?
To be honest, it was quite out of the blue for me, but I think it was because I kind of stopped paying some of her bills.
Well, has that changed? Has that situation changed? Are you able to support her?
Oh, yeah. I am. Completely, yeah.
All right, so maybe the money situation's different now, and she'll see you in a different way.
Yeah, I don't know.
The only answer I can give you is a very, very tangential answer, because I don't know the two people involved, and I don't think it's fair for me to even dwell on this any longer, because without seeing you and her together and asking her what she has to say about it and what the real reasons were for her basically leaving you, I mean, there's no way I can give a reasonable answer, so I'm going to defer on that one. I'm going to punt the ball. Sorry, I cannot help you with that one. Okay? Washington State, Lyle, you're on the Savage Nation topic question, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. So I'm a 22-year-old college student, and I'm going to be finishing up my undergrad in exercise science here this winter. Yep. And kind of my plan for the last 2 years or so was to go to grad school for occupational therapy. And basically, I just started reading Think and Grow Rich, and it kind of gave me a different perspective on life and how to pursue what I want to do and, you know, make a living and,
What is the actual question? You're not sure you want to go into occupational therapy? You want to do something to make where you can make more money, in essence?
Yeah.
All right, so what's the question to me? You've already made up your mind about what you want to do, so what are you actually asking me?
Well, I know you're a big advocate on the staying in school and just with times and how hard it is.
Well, I'm not so sure I'm a big advocate of it anymore. I don't know what's waiting for you when you get out. What is it that you envision doing to make your fortune? Let's be clear. You want to make a fortune, correct? And that's perfectly fine. Don't be ashamed of it. I have to hide it. They want to become rich. Why hide it? So you want to take your education and move on to some level where you have a path to make some money, correct?
Correct.
All right. So what are you thinking of doing?
Well, I'll have my undergrad in exercise science, and I'm thinking get my personal trainer degree. And do that for just a couple of years.
Well, hold on now. How many personal trainers really make a good living in this country today in a down economy? How many people still have the money to hire someone to come over and teach them how to do push-ups?
Not a lot, but I'm thinking about franchising a gym.
How can you jump to franchising? You're going to create a chain of gyms?
Well, or just open a Gold's Gym or something along that line.
You mean buy into a franchise?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Have you worked in a gym yet? Have you yet worked in a gym?
Yes, I have.
And you think they're money makers?
I think if you do it right in the right location, you can.
Well, I think a lot of gyms are always looking for new members and new memberships. I don't know how many of them are really profitable. You'd be very, very careful before you put any of your savings or your parents' savings or your loans into a gym, without really looking at the profit and loss of that gym and look at the costs and look at the lease. Be very careful before you invest in a small business is all I can say to you, because there are a lot of people trying to unload real turkeys on people. 1-800-449-8255. Let's fire one more question on the Savage Nation. Shelley, New York, go ahead, please. What's your comment?
Hi. How are you doing, Mike? Speaking about life, you sound like the type of fellow who was very much involved in summer times up in the Catskills. I'm not sure, but I'm taking a wild guess.
So what is it you're asking or saying or who?
If you have any fond memories, I know back in the 50s, we used to wait for the hack.
I have no fond. What, fond memories about July 4th? You want me to live in memory lane? Memory lane? I remember sparklers on the lawn at 10 o'clock at night running around like crazy, like little children fireflies. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here's the breaking news in the Savage Nation. Eric Holder, okays a criminal probe, not of the drug gangs running around America, not of the illegal aliens, not of the ATF agents who sold machine guns to drug dealers in Mexico, but Attorney General Holder has okayed a criminal probe of Bush-era CIA operatives because they interrogated terrorists a little too harshly. That's the story. Now you understand the kind of world we're living in. Okay? Wisconsin, Dave, you're up in the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I have kind of a boating, I guess, lifestyle question. I have three kids, and I'm looking to pick up a boat called ProDrive Shallow Water Boats. It's like a flat boat. They're self-bailing, about a 20-footer, and has an air-cooled motor. And you can get to places like a river or a small lake or even in a marsh or for hunting or fishing.
Sounds good. I'm not even familiar with them. So what's the – you just want to tell us about it or you want my opinion on it?
No, I guess one of your opinion, you know, it's going to be a few bucks. But as far as what life lessons do you think besides just having fun to the kids? You know, I got the three kids. Are they going to be having – learning more than just having a good time on the boat? Like when you took
you go on a waterway. Look what you're exposing them to. You're exposing them to, the reason I go out on a boat is not to speed around on a boat. I go very slowly. I like to look at the landforms. I like to look at the light changes. I love to see the kind of birds. You know how many different kinds of birds there are in the waterway that you're in. You can probably get them interested in the waterfowl and the type of fish, the type of other water creatures. There's a lot of zoology going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the kind of boat, I guess, we live in Wisconsin. Our Wisconsin River empties into the Mississippi. I guess it even thought of taking a few weeks or a month off and going all the way down to the Gulf, I suppose. I don't know.
Well, how big a boat is this?
Well, it's a 20. The one I was looking at is only a 20-footer. It's a self-bailing, which means that it's
got... Well, but you can't bring that down to the Mississippi, can you?
I don't know. I think it would...
No. Well, you're not going to live on the boat, are you? Not a 20-footer.
No, you'd have to camp out in the evenings and, you know, stop.
I don't know. That's taking on an awful lot, I think. I would limit it to your local area. But as I say, before we depart, there's a lot more to boating than just speeding around and yelling on the water. And it's got to do with the flora and the fauna. Thank you. I mean, I love to go out on a boat and go 5-10 knots. And I look at I like to hear the sound of the water, you know, slapping against the hull of my boat. I like to watch in San Francisco. I mean, you watch the fog coming in or the fog going out. The landforms, we're very lucky because none of the surrounding area here is flat on San Francisco Bay. It's all got beautiful hills, and the hills fall right into the sea. I mean, you could be 30, 40 feet offshore, and you could be in 110 feet of water because you're looking at mountaintops here. Geologically, you're looking at mountaintops. All the landforms here are mountaintops, which is amazing. Thank God for the last phase of global warming, and we wouldn't have a nice bay. Speaking of which, you know, the other night I opened up a beautiful – I love blueberries. It's one of my favorite fruits. I also know how good they are for you with regard to vision. So I'm eating the blueberries, and I made a joke. I said, jokingly in the kitchen, I said, you know, thank God for global warming, or we wouldn't have blueberries. So I said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, think about it. You had an ice age, a mini ice age here on Earth – for 300 to 500 years, where you couldn't grow blueberries, especially in the northern hemisphere, and it was only with the retreating of the ice as a result of global warming, related no doubt not to the Model T Ford, since it occurred in the 1700s, but the global warming occurred primarily because the sun's activity altered. And so with the retreating of the ice, you had a blossoming of agriculture, especially in the northern hemisphere. And as a result, you can grow blueberries and other fruit as far north, for God's sake, probably as southern Canada, if not even farther north. So they laughed. I said, don't these idiots understand what they're talking about? They're fighting global warming. What are they arguing for? What would they like? Another ice age? Would they like another ice age where food stores dry up because there's no food? They don't even know what they're talking about. Not only is there no man-made global warming, which is not to argue for pollution. I've done more to fight pollution on this earth than all the liberals you might know put together in one place. But let's not distort science to sell a fraud.
Savage. Warning.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here is what's on the Savage Nation today. We've been talking about, well, I guess everything in the news. Obama hits all-time low among the poor, and his approval is comparatively highest amongst the rich. Would you believe this? I don't understand that one. I thought the reverse would be true. California insists on collecting sales tax from online retailers. Well, that's interesting. California has told large online retailers such as Amazon.com and other major internet stores that they will be responsible for collecting state sales taxes on all purchases made from residents of California. Well, this is interesting. It's very, very interesting because what? That means that every state can now insist on it? Well, I don't know the answer to this. There is some argument to be made that it is a way of, you know, raising revenue on sales. I don't see that this is such a big deal. I mean, the fact is because if you avoid sales taxes online, people who own stores are legally required to collect sales taxes, and maybe this will help them. Topic number two, three actually, Chris Hansen caught on tape cheating on his wife. Now, who is Chris Hansen? Well, who is he? He's the progenitor of the show To Catch a Predator. Well, he isn't exactly a predator, but he's caught on tape cheating on his wife with a Florida weather girl, 20 years younger than his wife. Wow, what goes around comes around. Hey, Chris. These are some of the topics. Let's go to michaelsavage.com and see what else is in the news. U.S. recognizes Muslim Brotherhood. Way to go, Hillary. Harvard says that July 4th parades are right-wing. I swear to God, that's what Harvard came up with. But then again, who's ever listened to Harvard in the last 50 years? Obama and Holder are demonizing the CIA. They've decided today to go ahead and prosecute Bush-era interrogations. That's all they've got to do? Can you believe this, Beowulf? Unbelievable. This is a shocker, but Israel has been put on a terror list by the United States. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. U.S. designates Israel as a country that tends to promote, produce, or protect terrorists, and it also calls Israel an anti-terror partner. This is unbelievable. This is incomprehensible. It's listing Israel among 36 specifically designated countries it believes have shown a tendency to promote, produce, or protect terrorist organizations or their members. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. This is incomprehensible.
Iran, I guess, gets the seal of approval.
Texas governor urges action against Israel protesters. You see, there's two sides to this. Obama hates Jews and hates Israel, according to what I can tell, given that he's our first Muslim president, while the governor of Texas, being a genuine Christian, wants to protect Israel. How any Jew in America could ever vote for the man in the White House is beyond me. Some of the terrorists in Gitmo have asked to stay there rather than go home. They prefer captivity in Gitmo to freedom in their own countries. Tell that to Senator Turbin Durbin. Turbin Durbin is quoted as saying an illegal alien could be our next president or a future president.
Let me ask everyone here today who is a dreamer, a Dream Act student, to stand and be recognized. Thank you so much for being here, for the sacrifice you made to come. When I look around this room, I see America's future. Our doctors, our teachers, our nurses, our engineers, our scientists, our soldiers, our congressmen, our senators, and maybe our president.
Isn't that wonderful? What a senator. Also on MichaelSavage.com, poll numbers continue an alarming trend for Obama. And if we go to the bottom of this site, I don't want to read you all of them. To Catch a Predator host nailed. Well, we have that. Bogus breast cancer charity raised $9 million. Here's a cute one. We have the copy of the receipt. An ATM receipt showing an astounding $100 million balance sticking out of the slot at the Capital One Bank in the Hamptons. If you haven't read them yet, read the reviews of Trickle Up Poverty. They're really great reviews. Good summer reading. All this and more on The Savage Nation. Continuing our discussion of the movie last night on HBO, Too Big to Fail, which was dramatically interesting, captivating, but of course a greeting card that was probably written with money provided by some of the villains in the banking industry to the writer of the book who works for the New York Times, incidentally, the director, etc. Nevertheless, it's worth watching if you have HBO, but watch it with a very, very, very cautious, a great degree of caution, because most of it is fiction. We're now going to go and talk about some of the notes of Too Big to Fail, which exposes some of the villains behind the collapse of 2008. The patient is still dying. The patient was not really fixed by TARP and by the stimulus funds. The patient actually was just patched up and sent home, and the disease has now apparently spread. We all want the disease fixed. We want the economy fixed, and we want this done as quickly as possible, but we're not going to get it so long as, A, there's no justice. That means an investigation of the real players and an indictment of those who did commit crimes. And the return of assets that were taken from the American people. And I could start with one of them instead of speaking generically. The TARP fund, which is $750 or $800 million, I don't remember the number, approved by Bonnie Frank and Nancy Pelosi, TARP, remember? It was a bailout, Toxic Assets Relief Program. We have been told in this movie and elsewhere that all the money has been paid back by the banks. We don't know if that's true, number one, but even if it is, they did not pay back any interest on the money. So that's the number. Let's start with the interest on $700 million over that period of time. Let's demand that the banks give us the interest, okay, whatever the rate may be. Let's start with that. And then let's look at what the word TARP itself means, the acronym TARP. TARP. Rather, and illegal aliens. So when it all came down, who's responsible? Well, there's a lot of people responsible. You can start with Bonnie Frank. You can go to others in the banking industry who were named in the movie or not named. Then, of course, there's Christopher Cox, the SEC chairman. Why was he never asked how he let this happen? Those who caused the financial crisis in 2008 and ushered in Barack Hussein Obama are basically still pulling the strings. And they're going to put Obama back in power in 2012 as witness the Republican field right now. Why do you think the Republican field is chaotic? Why do you think no front runner has appeared? Why do you think the Republican Party is acting like, oh, shucks, we don't know what to do? Because it's a scam. Don't you understand? I told this to you 1,000 times on the show if I told you once. This is one man's opinion. The way the game is played is it's 8 years Dems, then 8 years Repub. Then 8 years Dems and 8 years Repub. We had 8 years of Clinton. Then we had 8 years of Bush. We only had, so far, a 2.5 or 3 years of whatever the number is, of Obama's regime. And he can't leave yet because they need him for 8 years. It's the way the game is played. So they can continue to say, well, when we're back in power, we'll straighten it out. Then it goes on and on and on. Okay, and that's where the Tea Parties arose. They're actually the American heroes. You have to understand that hundreds of millions of dollars being spent by Soros and others to smear the Tea Parties. Whenever you hear a commentator casting aspersions on Tea Parties, that's because they're bought and sold like prostitutes in Eastern Europe right now. Make no mistake about it. Half the commentators are owned or paid for by the Sandlers or by Soros or by one of the other front liberal groups, in my opinion. And they're cheaper than the cheapest whore on the cheapest street in your city. I don't care how pretty they may look. They're lower than the cheapest whore in your neighborhood. They're worse than the cheapest whore. It gets me sick to see them get away with it. They're bought and sold like a cheap whore in Budapest. And I'm sorry to be so graphic, but it's the only way you're going to listen to me. That's the only way you're going to listen to me. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
Wisconsin. Ray, on a totally different topic, thank God. What's on your mind, Ray?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Privilege to talk to you. Last week or the week before, you talked about the benefits of vitamin E, and I could have sworn it was like 15,000 IUs of vitamin E. I didn't quite
know. No. It was. Okay, I'm sorry. We were talking about vitamin A at the time. I wasn't feeling well, and I always revert to vitamin A therapy when I really start to feel something heavy coming down. And I have nothing against using beta-carotene. I've just found it has no effect on me whatsoever. I have found that only vitamin A has a medical reaction in me. So, and again, one last point on this vitamin A business. Arctic explorers, remember I told you some of them died from eating polar bear liver? Well, Arctic explorers learned that polar bear liver was dangerous going back to the 16th century when some explorers first lost their skin after eating polar bear liver. 1 pound of polar bear liver would contain over 30 million units of vitamin A. And again, a last point. Many of you could be deficient in vitamin A today. Why? It's found mainly in animal and fish livers. You don't eat that anymore because you're on a low cholesterol diet. You probably don't drink milk. You don't use butter. You don't use eggs. Again, the obsession with cholesterol reduction and fat reduction. So most of the vitamin A that Americans used to get is out of their diet. Now, yellow, orange, and green plants contain carotene, which is converted to vitamin A in the body. But the chances are you're not getting enough of that anyway. So, as I say to you, there are subclinical deficiencies and overt classical deficiencies in vitamins all along the spectrum in this country, which accounts for the increased number of various diseases that were once eliminated in this country. Okay? I think I've covered the waterfront for now on that subject. Just because I'm sick and tired of talking about medical care without talking about what you can do about it. I mean, you want to talk about self-care? That's a great topic. For years, I wrote about that. I was obsessed with it. Why? Because my dad died young of a heart attack, so did Grandpa. So I was obsessed in college. I started wondering, what in the heck? I'll never forget when my father came home from the hospital, the doctor put him on a low-salt diet. Why? I used to look at it. He was not allowed to use sodium chloride, God rest his soul. They gave him KCL, potassium chloride. So I was a young biology student. I said, why would they put him on potassium, not sodium? Well, then I learned because sodium increases blood pressure and they want people to have lower blood pressure. They put him on potassium chloride. So I started to think, if the doctors would tell my poor father after a heart attack to reduce his salt intake, why didn't they tell him before? Why didn't they tell a poor man to cut down on salt before he got sick? Why didn't they tell him to cut down on the fats before he got sick? Either they didn't know or they didn't want him to know because there was no money in it. So I started to think, if potassium is better than sodium, what else might be involved in the development of heart disease? And that was the beginning of my long, long road of investigations and reading everything I could get my hands on, working with the smartest men in the world in the orthomolecular medical movement, the smartest doctors in the world. That doesn't mean there aren't great doctors other than them, but at that time, these were the smartest, most advanced minds Savage. In the world. Lisa Curtis, well, she's a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and she's analyzing America's economic security and political security in the Middle East. She joins us now on the Savage Nation to tell us how Obama's call for withdrawing troops from Afghanistan is a giant mistake. I'm not so sure I agree with her. Lisa, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you for having me.
Really, Lisa, after 10 years in Afghanistan, what have we really accomplished?
Well, we've actually accomplished some important things. First of all, in the last 10 months on the battlefield in Afghanistan, we have been able to wrest away some of the important strongholds of the Taliban, that is in the provinces of Helmand and Kandahar. We've been able to do this under General Petraeus's leadership and his counterinsurgency strategy, and because of the 30,000 additional surge troops. So that's an important achievement. And secondly, for the people of Afghanistan, you have millions more children going to school. You have women part of the social and political life, things that just were not happening when the Taliban ruled the country in the late 1990s. So, you know, there have been some progress. The media doesn't report on that progress back here in the U.S., but if you go to Afghanistan, you talk to the people, they understand what the coalition troops are doing, and they know that there have been major changes in their country, in their lives, since the coalition forces have been there.
Well, after bin Laden's murder, people feel like the mission in Afghanistan is over, is it?
No, it is not. Look, you know, the fact that we were able to eliminate bin Laden is a tremendous step in fighting terrorism. And, you know, this, along with the fact that our drone missile campaign in Pakistan's tribal areas has also put al-Qaeda on its back foot, are very positive developments. However, I think it's short-sighted to use bin Laden's death as justification for hastening the troop withdrawals from Afghanistan. You know, announcing this rapid withdrawal basically is likely to bolster the morale of the Taliban, encourage them to stick with the fight. And since we know al-Qaeda has not yet dissolved as an organization and its relationship with the Taliban remains strong, you know, any stepping back from the fight or reducing the military pressure on the Taliban will in turn benefit al-Qaeda. And, you know, it could provide al-Qaeda a lifeline at this very point where we should be pressing our advantage, taking advantage of the situation where you have al-Qaeda on its back foot and using that to try to split the Taliban from al-Qaeda, not to back down in the fight in Afghanistan. I think that is... that's a mistake that the Obama administration is making.
Well, how long is long enough for us to stay in Afghanistan?
Yeah, I know the American public is war weary, and it does feel that we've, you know, been at war for 10 years. You know, the fact of the matter is, it's only been in the last few years that we've put the kind of resources and financial investment and strategic leadership that was necessary to fight in Afghanistan. So that's one thing we have to keep in mind. The second is, you know, just how critical this region still is to U.S. national security. Whether we like it or not, the future of Pakistan and Afghanistan are closely linked to U.S. national security. And while I understand that the American public is frustrated and, you know, the polling shows this, as, you know, President of the United States, I think, you know, it's incumbent upon President Obama to show leadership and to take the long-term view of U.S. national security interests rather than focusing on polling numbers. And I think what we've seen with this withdrawal plan that President Obama has laid out, that he is risking squandering these hard-won gains that the U.S. has made on the battlefield in southern Afghanistan over the last 10 months. And we now know both General Petraeus and Admiral Mullen in their testimony to Congress have basically said that they did not support such a hasty withdrawal and that they're, you know, disappointed in the strategy that has been laid out. And I think there's concern that the slope of withdrawal is just too steep. The fact that we'll be withdrawing 23,000 troops from the period between January and September 2012, and they worry that this is happening during the fighting season, and so that it could jeopardize some of the gains that have already been made. And so what we see is President Obama, you know, is denying his military commanders the flexibility they need, and instead he appears to have based his decision largely around the U.S. domestic political calendar.
Lisa, look, Afghanistan is known as the graveyard of empires. Are we falling into the same trap?
No, we're not. You know, I think we need to look at this in the correct light. The Soviets, you know, were pushed out of Afghanistan, but, you know, there was absolutely, you know, no support for the Soviet troops being there. You know, and also, you know, they were fighting on their own. In Afghanistan, we have a coalition of over 40 nations, all the NATO nations, fighting in Afghanistan. So it's very much an international effort. There is still support for coalition forces being there. You know, this is despite President Karzai's unhelpful comments, which I think he, you know, he has his own political reasons for making those comments. But every time they've done a poll, it shows the Afghans still largely support the coalition presence and understand what they're trying to do. So I think there's some major differences, and this has become sort of an accepted line of thinking that nobody can succeed in Afghanistan. It's a lost cause. It's hopeless. And I just think that's incorrect. And we've shown over the last 10 months that the U.S. counterinsurgency strategy can show signs of success. It can work, but it simply needs to be given a little bit more time.
Well, isn't Afghanistan destined to be a failed state as it always has been?
No, it's not. Like I said, there's been improvements over the last 10 years in Afghanistan. You now have over 7 million children going to school compared to under 1 million that went to school in the late 1990s under the Taliban rule. We see women playing an active role there. You have female parliamentarians. You have women involved in the economy and the social life of the country. That's a major improvement over the last 10 years. So there's been progress for humans. You know, the human quality of life in Afghanistan has improved over the last 10 years. Unfortunately, you know, Pakistan has not helped in our efforts to stabilize that country because of its toleration of the Taliban sanctuary in their country. But I think, you know, if you go back into the history of Afghanistan, you look at before the Soviets invaded in the early 1980s, you can see that there was a relative period of stability and prosperity in Afghanistan. And so it is possible. And unfortunately, what President Obama's speech has done is raised fears in the region that the U.S. will make the same mistake we made in 1989, which was turning our backs on Afghanistan. After the Soviets left, the U.S. completely disengaged from Afghanistan, left it to its own devices, and civil war broke out. The Taliban filled the vacuum. Then bin Laden was able to come, forge a relationship with the Taliban, and the rest is history, as they say. We simply cannot allow the situation to return as it was pre-9/11. We can't allow ourselves to be vulnerable to terrorists who seek to do us harm. And I think we have made progress. We've made some major progress against al-Qaeda. The Taliban still linked to al-Qaeda. We should be trying to split them apart, but we should also be realistic in our expectations about that happening anytime soon. We have to have a little bit more patience. And I think it's, you know, critical to our national security interest, and this is the point that needs to be made. You know, a lot of people are relating the situation in Afghanistan directly back to the domestic economic situation. But the problem is we forget that if we don't take care of this problem now, it could be more costly in the future, both in terms of future terrorist attacks on the U.S. homeland and what it might cost to have to go back into Afghanistan at some later point. The reality is we have to remain engaged with this critical country. And I'm not saying we need combat troops there forever. I think the goal of all combat troops out by 2014 is a reasonable goal. But even after that, we will need financial engagement, diplomatic engagement, and even military training support for the military there. These are all going to be a critical component of our foreign policy for decades to come.
Lisa Curtis, thank you for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Well, thank you, Michael, for having me. And if I could just encourage viewers to, if they want to read more about these issues, to come to www.heritage.org, and they can read more on Afghanistan, Pakistan, or any other issues relating to foreign policy or domestic issues here in the U.S. at that website.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
The Samurai of Talk Radio, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I think I need a vacation. I'd like to go to a campground for about 3 weeks. Play some jazz for me. I'm running out of steam here. I'm thinking of buying a campground because I don't want to go to one where anybody is there, actually. Look, I'm a loner. What could I tell you? If I have to listen to somebody for 1 minute, I go berserk. No, let me talk about that for a minute. Turn off the music. I went on the internet today because I'm burned out. So I started to look in certain areas of Placer County, California, which is some of those has some of the most gorgeous lakes in the world, Gold Lake and things like that. So there's campgrounds up there that are on Forest Service land that are on long-term leases that the owners have. They have like five cabins, you know, some of them are rather primitive. Beautiful log cabins that I dreamed about as a boy. No television, you know what I'm saying? So I said, well, why don't I buy one of those lodges with five cabins, you know what I'm saying? And invite nobody there, just be me and Teddy. Because I actually think at this phase of my life I wouldn't be able to handle it. I don't think I could handle it anymore. Maybe when I was young, yes. But at this stage of my life, I don't think I could be alone in the woods anymore. I don't have a Thoreau thing in me. A lot of people go crazy, by the way, when they go back to nature. They don't tell you about that. Oh, yeah, it's a famous story. In the 60s, there was a couple. I forget who they were. They went back to nature. They were heroes of the liberals in the commie left, the peacenik back-to-earth movement. And they moved to Alaska to get away from it all, right? And they used to write articles. They lived 6 months in Alaska in the outback. And then 6 months they live in the Caribbean when it got cold. So, all right, they have it both ways. All right, it's their business. Eventually, the guy walked into a propeller blade of a plane. He couldn't take it anymore. Just him and his long-toothed wife, you know what I'm saying? And the mosquito. Him and the mosquito and the wife. He walked into the propeller of the plane that came to get him. This is the problem. You can't do the back-to-nature thing anymore. It's too late. Thoreau is dead. Sacramento, Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, greetings from all your fans born in 1981.
Hey, thank you.
Recently, I went on a hike way up in the hills there and found a crystal clear, ice-cold lake, and I went swimming in it, and it was one of the most refreshing things I can remember in the past. I wondered if you were a swimmer, and if you
I am. I'm a very good swimmer. I'm a former lifeguard. I haven't saved anybody's life, but I'm a former lifeguard. Yeah, I'm a very good swimmer to this day. And the question is what, Tony?
Do you take advantage lately of the ice-cold, beautiful mountain?
You know, you're raising a very interesting point. I've read that immersing yourself in ice-cold water, although it's shocking, is one of the most healthful things you can do.
No,
I have an aversion to cold water. I don't really like cold water, Tony. Maybe what I need right now is throw myself in San Francisco Bay. I don't mean off the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm saying pull my boat into a cove. It's 58 degrees, the water, though. That's the thing. It's cold.
No, go up to a lake up on Mount Lassen and take a dive.
Yeah, what's the water temperature in a lake up there?
I don't know, but it was perfect. Probably a little bit warmer than 58 degrees.
Okay. Well, I remember there was an area in Alpine Meadows, California, that's a stunning. There's an area called Five Lakes. You probably don't know that area. In 1980, I was hiking up there a lot with family when the kids were young. I even was able to backpack one of my children on my back all the way to the top of the lake. You get up there in August, there's still snow on the ground, which to me is miraculously beautiful. And the lake, the ice is finally melted out in late August. The water is like ice water, you know what I mean, Tony? And at that time, Mrs. S. swam in that lake. I couldn't even put a toe in it. Some people have a capacity for cold water. I don't have it.
You should try again.
Yeah, you mean maybe it'll snap me out of my malaise?
It might do something for you.
Yeah, it could give me a heart attack altogether. Or either way, it's better off than what I have now. Oh, God, I shouldn't get... Thank you for the... No, you got to be careful. I don't believe in shocking the system. I have my own exercise regimen. It consists in watching 5 to 6 hours of television after... No. I bicycle every day. I really do. I don't mean... You see, this is... I'm going to talk about exercise. Am I at a break point here or what? Where am I? I'm fine. I could talk for 3 minutes. Good. You know, a lot of guys drop dead in their 30s way back when from excessive running. They would run and look at the watches. Bingo. Blowout. So I was a runner when I was in my 30s. I weighed, you know, I was thin, low cholesterol, runner. Till one day I was running up to a waterfall. Every day I'd run to a waterfall. And I heard an inner voice screaming at me, stop running, stop running, stop running, stop running. So I thought I went crazy. So I stopped running. Never ran again the rest of my life. My body was warning me to stop running. And then in those that period, that decade, there were a lot of very famous deaths of runners. Jim Fix, for example, was a very famous runner. He wrote for Runner's Magazine, and he dropped dead while running. So you say, well, what does that prove? I'm not saying it proves anything other than the body is not made for continuous stress of this kind, the kind that people put themselves through with exercise. So as time went on, I started to study different methods of what's considered to be exercise. And the Chinese have it right. The ancient Chinese had it exactly right, which is the moderate approach to it. No excessive pushing of the body. At least that's what I interpreted it to mean. I mean, maybe it's my own interpretation. So if I bicycle moderately, not until I'm in a sweat bath and looking at a watch. I'm not doing it to sweat. I'm doing it to get some balance in my body. Balance is one of the most important things you can get in your body. So bicycling is excellent for gaining balance alone, even if you just do it to keep your balance. I've bicycled all my life, by the way. If I miss a day, I don't feel good. A couple of miles to town and back, go to look at people down in the mall, see what's going on, women, children, men, vendors. You know, it's like a touch of life. It's a real town. In a modern American suburb, the mall is actually our town, since there's no towns left to speak of. It's as good a town as any. So anyway, bicycle, look around, push around, get some, you know, yard time, go back to the prison of the computer and radio. But when it comes to pushing your body, I believe that many young men have it wrong, and they really push themselves too hard. They push and they push and they push and they run for a certain amount of time. They look good, don't get me wrong. They're thin, they're lean, they're in good shape. But I'm not so sure that that is so good to sustain for a very long period of time in your life. Moderate, moderate, moderate. And all you got to do is talk to an orthopedic surgeon about it if you think I'm making this up. The joints will go from excessive pounding. The hips, the joints are going to be replaced early on from the running. So there are other less, what do they call it? There's a word, less impact kind of sports that you can practice. But it's the same with weightlifting. You don't have to crunch weights for 5 hours a day. I mean, unless you're a Navy SEAL or something like that, or an Army Ranger or one of those, of course you want to be as hard as a rock. But I'm talking about the average person who wants to keep reasonably fit after the age of a certain age. That's all. You don't have to overdo it. That has been my philosophy. And thus far, it's worked for me. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I think that everyone has to come to their own ideas about what's going to work for them. And it comes back to the jumping in a cold lake. Now, maybe that's good shock therapy when you're young and it wakes you up. It's certainly invigorating. But I think after a certain age, if you leap into an ice-cold lake, you run the risk of a shock that could be fatal to your system. Things change, the body changes, people change, and you have to change with your age. You have to change with the ages as well. Nothing significant in what I just said at all.
Savage.